This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Wednesday today. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Obviously, I won't be working tomorrow since it's Thanksgiving. Well, I won't say obviously because there are people who will work tomorrow on Thanksgiving. I actually swung by Walmart this morning before I made it into work, chatting with the checkout person, and she was bemoaning the fact that she was going to have to come to work tomorrow. Because Walmart is spending more time doing their doorbuster, and now it's Black Thursday, apparently. It was just Black Friday, now it's Black Thursday. But that's okay. It's very interesting. I've pretty well made the decision at this point, unless something really, really big comes along. I am doing Amanda in the Schoolberry Tree next. And so I've been reflecting as I've been finishing up on Grumpy Old Prophets. I've been spending time reflecting on where the Amanda and the Schoolberry Tree story is going. And this is going to get very interesting. When I write stuff, I like to write stuff that changes me in some way, that helps me come to a new understanding of something in some way. I really like that. And with sort of half being aware of it and not fully being aware of it, at least not aware of it to the degree that I think I'm becoming, there is a larger idea in Amanda and the Schoolberry Tree. And when I wrote it, I knew the idea was there and I had the nuggets for the idea, but now that I'm working on it more, I can actually see things about this big story of the machine versus the individual. So this is going to be interesting. I need to finish up Grumpy Old Prophets, which I will. I've had a little bounces in that schedule this week. Obviously, Thanksgiving is coming up, and so I was really intending to start my read-through on Monday night, and then my son-in-law and daughter needed some help filming something. They were filming videotaping, so I went that, and then I was going to start last night. Had something else come up that I had to take care of, and this evening we've got family coming in, so I'm going home to clean my office and try to finish up on bills and, you know, a few things like that. So it's very, very interesting, but in the midst of all that, then I've been pondering this idea again of the machine and the individual. And in the midst of all that, I saw a really interesting program, obviously coming from a very set perspective, but I enjoy listening to all different kind of perspectives and seeing how much of that is true. And it was really about poverty and the third world and why the third world will remain in poverty, and why it has remained in poverty, and some really interesting things that I think I can work into the whole saga of Amanda and the Schoolberry Tree. And I just started reading Super Freakonomics. I actually need to go back and read Freakonomics, but I'm in the process of reading Super Freakonomics, which is really interesting as well. So a lot of cool, fun stuff. Fun stuff. Anyways, a lot to talk about today. CNN had an article that was written by John Blake called Two Preaching Giants and the Betrayal That Tore Them Apart. And of course, that kind of thing always catches my eye because I'm always fascinated by the disconnect between what Jesus taught us and what has become of the Christian church, who are supposedly followers of Christ. Having just finished up acting, which evoked surprisingly fewer contentious criticisms than I thought it would, frankly, because I'm taking on some of the sacred cows of the early Christian church, a lot of people believe, wow, that early Christian church, they really had it together, and basically I'm saying in acting, no, they didn't, they went off the rails really early. And the real people who had it together are the ones that you never hear about anymore. I expected that to be a little contentious in some of the comments from my beta readers, but either no one felt at liberty to talk about that, or when people were reading it, they went, oh, well, okay. So that's been kind of interesting. But the gist of acting, the gist of the book is that what happened early on is that the leaders decided that they would talk about Jesus, they would talk about the Old Testament, they would talk about judgment, they would accuse those who weren't in the church of crucifying Jesus, and their recruitment techniques basically would be based on fear, not love. And they certainly wouldn't teach what Jesus taught, i.e. the Sermon on the Mount. So that's kind of the basic idea of acting. And I had that in the back of my mind as I was reading this article about these two preaching giants and the betrayal that tore them apart. I am going to duck in real quick here and grab a movie, because Wednesday is the day I do all my finances, so I am going to be spending some time today just sitting and running numbers and running backups and all that kind of stuff. So I will be right back. And I'm back. The wonders of editing. Wow, think of how much stuff we could get done if we could just put life on pause, take care of a few things, and then come back to life anytime we wanted. Anyways, so I had in the back of my mind this idea of acting, of the book Acting, my book, that there is a huge difference between talking about Jesus and actually teaching what Jesus taught. So we'll just set that off to the side, and then I'll just kind of run through the article, and I'm going to try to just run through the article without a whole lot of side commentary, and then maybe just kind of wrap it up on the end. The two preaching giants that are referred to in this article are Charles Stanley and Andy Stanley. They both are at the head of huge churches. Andy is Charles Stanley's son. Andy currently pastors a church that has 7 different campuses and at least 33,000 people are attending these 7 campuses each Sunday. Seems to be a pretty down-to-earth guy. I mean, he tells his people, look, one day we're not going to be the coolest church. Nothing is forever. As soon as somebody thinks forever, that's when they close their hand. Now they have to control, maintain, and protect it. Things get weird. Okay, that's pretty good. I agree with that. Andy is 54, by the way, which is the same age as I am, so that's interesting. He did say that through this experience that he had had with his father that he understands drive-by shootings. Because he said, I was so angry at my dad, I was trying to do the right thing. And so now let's talk about his dad, Charles Stanley. For those of you who don't know, In Touch Ministries is Charles Stanley. Huge church. He has a huge church, too. In the words of the article, it sits like a Greek temple on the crest of a hill overlooking the Atlanta skyline. There's a large American flag that flies in front of it. And when you come in the entrance, there's a mammoth portrait of Charles Stanley smiling. And it bears the inscription, Obey God and leave all the consequences to him. Of course, as son and father, they had many experiences growing up. Andy talks about remembering that when he was in eighth grade, his father waged a, quote, bruising battle to become the senior pastor of First Baptist. What's going on? Said one night during a tense church meeting, a man cursed aloud and slugged Charles in the jaw. Andy said his father didn't flinch, nor did he retaliate. He kept fighting and eventually became senior pastor of First Baptist. Andy says, I saw my dad turn the other cheek, but never did he turn tail and run. Okay, so Andy also said that since they were Southern Baptist, they really believed that everyone else was wrong. Said he grew up believing that really the Southern Baptists are the only true Christians. Things started changing for Andy the day that a gay and lesbian group decided they were going to march past the church. The leaders of the church dismissed the church early to avoid contact with the group. But the organizers of the march changed the schedule, and Andy says he recalls as he watched the First Baptist members file out of the church and they gawked at the gay and lesbian members, and then he noticed a Methodist church across the street whose members held out cups of waters and signs that read, Everybody welcome, come and worship with us. And Andy said that really kind of struck him. And he started thinking about that. He decided that he was just going to enroll in college and become a journalist, but his father, asked him to be a youth minister at the church, and he did that. And when they opened their first second campus for the church, as a satellite church, Andy became the pastor. This was in 1992. And his church just started swelling. Within 2 months, the satellite church had 2,000 members in it. And so everybody, started looking towards Andy and Charles Stanley, and everyone just sort of started assuming that Charles, when he retires, he's just going to hand it off to Andy because it's not a ministry anymore. It was Andy's inheritance. There was only one real huge problem in all this planning, and it had to do with Charles Stanley's marriage. Because while the ministry was certainly going great guns, and while they kept adding numbers and growing, there was trouble at home. And it was quiet, but it was definitely there. And Mrs. Stanley, Anna, stopped coming to the church. And eventually, she filed for divorce in 1993. Now, if you don't know, what you need to understand is that divorce in Southern Baptist circles is considered a sin. Doesn't matter if it's divorce and remarriage. Divorce, that's it. You are breaking a covenant. That's a sin. This put Charles Stanley in a very, very difficult position. Now, what does Anna Stanley say? She said she's had many years of discouraging disappointments and marital conflict. She said that her husband, in effect, abandoned the marriage, that he chose his priorities, and she was not one of them. Of course, now the church has a problem because, we have a pastor who's going through divorce, so there must be sin in his life. He needs to step down. So there's people in the church that are calling for him to step down. And Charles Stanley's response is, well, I'll work on my marriage, but I'm not going to resign as pastor. Because he says, quote, you see, in my ministry, I brought the survival spirit. You do or die. You do whatever is necessary to win. It doesn't make any difference what it is. Direct quote. That's a direct quote. Okay, no editorializing. Keep moving on. Now, you know, from his background, Charles Stanley, he had some rough upbringings. He lived in like 17 homes before his 8th birthday. I mean, so he had to be a survivor. And when you pair this attitude of survivor with a feeling that you've been anointed by God to do something, you get a pretty rigid person. He's also quoted in the article as saying, God said you keep doing what I called you to do until I tell you to do something else. I got that straight from the Lord. I was simply obeying God. Okay. Meanwhile, his son Andy, is kind of looking at things and thinking, wow, that church, you know, my dad's church, they're really rigid. And they started incorporating some of other approaches to meeting people, sort of the seeker-friendly stuff, you know, stopped wearing suits, oh no, you know, the church grows even more, blah, 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 blah. And so there starts to be this little rift. And the divorce thing, you know, keeps coming along, keeps coming up. There's all this contention, and one day Andy decides he's going to go talk to his dad about this. I mean, when they recount this story of him going and talking to his dad about this, it talks about how that, you know, Andy is coming in and the secretary sees him and she kind of scurries out because she doesn't want to be there when the explosion happens. And basically, Andy sits down with his dad and starts talking to his dad. And starts talking to him about the divorce. And he says, Dad, your church is not going to leave you. They need the opportunity to choose to have you as pastor if you divorce. Let them choose. Well, that was it. You know, as far as Charles Stanley was concerned, his son had gone over to the enemies, had betrayed him. How dare he suggest that he step down? And so this is huge, huge contention between them. And there was a lot of contention. And during this whole time, Andy ends up reading a book by Gene Edwards, A Tale of Three Kings. And I actually clipped out the quote. I should have kept the quote. But it really impacted him. And so he decided, that's it. I'm walking away empty-handed. I'm not going to fight my dad on this. I'm not going to have this contentious stuff. I'm just walking away. And so he resigned his church. He didn't have any church. He didn't have any salary. He didn't have any health benefits. He didn't have anything. He just walked away. Eventually, I think he did end up, obviously, starting another church. Eventually, the drama did end. The divorce became final in 2000. First Baptist eventually voted to retain Charles as its pastor. He recently celebrated his 80th birthday at First Baptist, and he was presented with a large photograph depicting Jesus counseling him as he prepared a sermon. You know, they brought in a professional model, someone to look like Jesus, and they had Charles Stanley sitting there showing that Jesus was watching over Charles Stanley as he prepared the sermon. Delaying the comments. So anyways, of course, there's still a problem, though. And the problem is that despite the fact that now the church... I'm getting my mail. One moment. Despite the fact that the church has now said, yes, you can be our pastor, even though you're divorced. I've gotten past that hurdle. He has no relationship with his son. To his credit, Charles Stanley decides that he really needs to fix up his relationship with his son. And lo and behold, what he does is he starts inviting his son to come have a meal with him, apparently at a local Mexican restaurant. Just keeps inviting him to lunch. And over lunch, over the stiff, rigid, uncomfortable lunches. I'm backing into my garage. One after another, eventually, they begin to build a relationship and they work their way through it. And they rediscover the things that they had lost or perhaps never had help in the first place. They do go to get some counseling about it. Charles Stanley starts sort of opening up and doing some things in the church that were proscribed by the Southern Baptists. He says that women should be able to preach. Put in a 12-step program in his church and an orchestra. Wait, was that Charles? Yes, that was Charles. He's asking. Yeah, he went to a counselor with his son. And eventually, they start getting together. They start preaching for other because his son is, you know, off, and he's built this other huge church as well. And they rebuild their relationship. What's interesting is that in the process of all this, Andy learned some interesting things about himself as well, because apparently he's an introvert who struggles at times even to make conversation offstage with his members. But he's good about listening to the people who will disagree with him. And while he was going through this, he realized that he was becoming judgmental and he was angry at his parents and the people who questioned his integrity. He felt like he was becoming, you know, a Pharisee. And he realized that the battle wasn't just with his father, it was with himself. He said, I saw the dark side of myself and I realized that I'm not any better than anyone else. At one point, he was upset that his father, Eve, despite all the effort, was not changing. And he asked his counselor, when can I give up on my relationship with Dad? And the counselor, rightly so, yay, answered, when your heavenly father gives up on his relationship with you. Charles and Anna Stanley still don't talk. They rarely talk. The divorce apparently has helped Charles in some ways. He said, instead of destroying me, it's flung open the doors for me. People used to say, I couldn't watch you. What do you know about hurt, pain, and loneliness? Now I can watch. I go back and I realize that God used all that for good. So, you know, I'm reading through this whole thing and it's just so sad. Because of the obvious lack of relationship. It's so sad because of the obvious lack of love and of implementing what Jesus taught. Turn the other cheek, blessed are the meek. If someone wants something from you, wants your coat, give them your cloak too. If someone compels you to go 1 mile, go two. Love your enemies, love God, love your neighbors. All this tight clutching to this is mine and I'm going to defend it. And in the process of defending his ministry, Charles Stanley, and building his ministry, he loses his relationship to his wife. No one can convince me that his wife did not love him. But what I suppose happened, and obviously I don't know them, but I've seen enough of these situations that it's a pretty good bet, that he got so involved in the things that he could control, so involved in the things that he could plan, that he could articulate, that he could instruct, that he could discipline, that he could order, so involved in those things, that in the things that you can't apply that type of rigid logic and performance to in your relationships, the messy, sometimes frustrating, sometimes non-fulfilling elements, in those things, he just determined that he wasn't even going to try. And just checked out. Probably assuming that his wife was just going to be the good little foot soldier. But you know, relationships don't work like that. They just don't work. And I just think it's very sad that someone has expended so much of their life to build such a mammoth machine, and yet they struggle so hard with the fundamentals of life, like relationship. I really don't care what I accomplish in life so much as I care about building the most effective and deepest and most loving relationships that I can. Because I will guarantee you that when I die, I will be less concerned about how many hours I worked in the office, how many books I wrote, well, how many books I sold, let's put it that way, than I will be with what was the depth of my relationship with my wife, my children, the people around me. Did I profoundly affect the lives of the people around me? And the only way I can profoundly affect them is in relationship. And when I look at what should be the leaders, the people who are in the forefront of showing Christianity to the world, and I read through this article, and I see so much contentiousness, and so much fear and anger and selfishness, it makes me sad. But as always, I cannot do anything about them. All I can truly do is live my life as I feel a life should be lived. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.